Don't worry about a thing, 'cause every little thing is gonna be alright. It's Breakfast with Bob.
Pacho Man, day 3. Breakfast with Bob. We are brought to you by EAS Sports Nutrition, Hoka One One, Polar, Oska Wellness, Velo Fix, Four Seasons Hualalai, where we'll have our World Championship edition on Sunday. And we are airing on triathlonworld.com one of our favorite guys, a legend from the sport of triathlon. He's going to be getting inducted in the Ironman Hall of Fame tonight. 3-time Ironman World Championship winner. 10 Ironman titles around the world, Mr. Peter Reed.
Yeah, around the world. It's
around
crazy.
The world. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. It's awesome being back here on the Big Island.
Well, how long has it been?
I think it's about 5 years.
Wow. Yeah. Has it changed?
The race just keeps getting bigger and bigger. One of the biggest things I'm seeing this year is the signage everywhere. You know, the Ironman logo is in more spots. It's clean. It's just like, it's almost like Ironman has made an active presence into the community, and the community seems to be really on board. So it's really, really cool to see.
So as a ski racer, how the heck did you get into this crazy world?
So I was trying to make it on the national ski team, and the best skiers at the time, guys like a name Steve Podborski and Ken Reed, they were cycling in the summertime to get the fitness ready for ski season. It was a different sport back then. Now all the skiers are power lifters, but back then it was an aerobic kind of conditioning. So I got into bicycle racing to get ready for ski season, and you know, my first summer I was doing better at bike racing than I ever did at ski racing. So kind of went with what I was good at, and that's how I got into cycling.
So you got into cycling, and when triathlon come around?
I got into cycling and my grades went backwards in school, and my parents said, you got to quit the bike racing, you gotta focus on. So they basically took my bike away. They were never really big into this athlete thing, even later on in life, so it's another topic so I actually got out of bike racing and then did nothing for a couple of years, kind of focused on my studies, and a tri club started at the school I was going at, and so I decided, what the heck? Why not? And I was single. I'm shy by nature. Yes. So meeting girls was really hard for me. All of a sudden, there's a lot of good-looking girls in the tri club, and I did it for the girls.
Suits.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it was a way to introduce and chat. And so I got into triathlon for the social scene.
I love that. Yeah. And what was your first race?
It was part of the Canadian Triathlon Series, a race that Graham Fraser put on.
Yeah.
And it was a short race, 400 meter swim, 20K bike, 6K run. I was last out of the water. I think I passed 30 people on the bike, and 30 people passed me on the run. And I remember back then I don't know if you remember this, nothing was digital, right? Everything was a results sheet. And, you know, you crossed the finish line, you waited for the result pages to come out, and the result pages came out. And I remember I was on that last page. And I was like, I got to do another one of these triathlons to move up a page.
Move up one page. Yeah, that's all I want to do.
That's all I want to do. Yeah, I want to be last page.
That is funny. Yeah. And as you're doing more and more of these triathlon things, when did you start to get the feeling, you know what, I could be pretty good at this?
It was graduating university with a degree in political science.
What am I going to do?
Yeah. So it was a way, you know, a lot of people went to Europe to backpack for a year.
Yeah.
I decided to do triathlon for a year, and I had some part-time jobs at running shops and health clubs, and just decided to race for a year and see what happens. And I had a couple of little blips on the radar, like I was fourth at Wildflower, and just a couple of little blips like that. And that's kind of what kind of planted the seed, just like, okay, let's see how far I can go. And
winning Wildflower.
That was quite a ways down the road.
Okay.
So I did Wildflower. I was fourth, qualified for Hawaii.
Yes.
DNF'd,
yes.
Way harder than I ever thought it was going to be.
Exactly.
Thought it was a, you know, what if, you know.
Wildflower maybe, times two, it's a big deal. Know,
yeah, exactly. Raced quite a bit on the Canadian scene. Had a few little top tens here and there. Managed to qualify again for Hawaii. Came back and DNF again. And this race just blew my mind how hard it was, how fit and fast everybody was. It just blew my mind. Yeah. I was crushed. And I kind of gave up on triathlon. And after about a winter of working in a factory, because I was in debt from, you know, racing for 2 years and not having a big job.
Real job,
finally, I decided I need to try this one more time. you know, third time, three strikes are out kind of thing. And managed to, I decided, I'm like, I'm going to track down someone who knows how to get ready for Ironman. I didn't have any money, but I knew a Canadian guy that was having a lot of success for his wife racing Ironman.
Heather Fuhrer,
Rock Fry, and he took charge right away. His calm demeanor and his patience and his no-stress way of living was the perfect person for me. And he guided me right from day one. He's like, this is
what you do.
This is what you do.
And he directed you slowly.
Very slowly. He helped me back.
Yeah, because I remember when you went to Germany to get ready for Ironman Germany, because that's where the best guys were. If you wanted to be good, you got to go train with those guys and race those guys. And you're getting ready for Ironman Germany. You have a homestay over there, right?
Yeah.
And the husband and wife, age groupers.
Age groupers, strong age groupers.
Strong age groupers are doing more mileage than you are.
Way more. Way more. You know, they were putting in maybe 25, 30 hours a week.
Yeah.
Rock had me between 15 and 20 hours a week.
And you were a pro.
I was a pro.
Right.
But, you know, he's right when we met each other and we had our conversation, he's like, Peter, it's going to take you 3 years to get to the volume you need to be to win an Ironman.
Right.
Just be patient. We'll get there. But I was on the phone with him once a week going, Rock, everybody's putting in more miles than me. You know, I was in Germany. That's like the mega miles. That's right. Where the mega miles are happening. And he's like, no, Peter, be patient. Stick with the plan. You'll see. And, you know, that plan was winning Wildflower, you know, and then fourth at Ironman Germany, second in Canada, breaking the course record, but second to Thomas Hellriegel.
Yes.
And coming here in Hawaii and placing fourth. Just behind Greg Welch, ahead of Dave Scott.
Oh, 96.
That was my first full year. Yeah, first full year of racing under Rock.
One spot in front of, did you feel him coming?
Well, it was funny. I had a buddy out there on the run course, and he's like, I've got good news and bad news.
Yeah.
The bad news, no, actually, he's like, the good news is you're looking great, you're looking solid. Dave Scott looks horrible. The bad news, he's catching you.
He looks horrible, but he's catching you. But he always looks horrible.
Yeah.
So you get fourth in that race, and that changes everything in terms of your perception of you.
Oh, yeah. My next Ironman, my next race after Kona was winning Ironman Australia. And a stock field, Jürgen Zach, Thomas Hellriegel. A lot of good guys
and
were there.
Was that was it Chris Lee?
No, that was the year after. Okay. It was my battle with Jürgen.
Yes, you battled with Jürgen.
Yeah.
But you beat him.
Oh, yeah.
Of course you beat him. Yeah. But what I love is I think it was Chris Lee was the next year.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and that was where...
Our biggest margin all day long was 11 seconds.
Yes.
We swam together, we biked together, we ran together, and ended in a sprint finish.
And, of course, the crowd is all Aussie. So you knew... That it's not like you were going to sneak up on a guy and you were on his shoulder.
You know, I tried. I didn't want it to end in a sprint finish.
No.
I tried so many times to surge, and he came back every single time. He surged, and it would go from like this insane pace to jogging pace. I think we had a massive gap on third place. So we weren't even thinking. It was mano a mano.
Yes.
Trying, feeling each other out. And luckily, through my bike racing background,
tactics,
I pulled a bike racing sprint finish. I hung on his left shoulder right to about 200 meters ago. I pretended I was going to go right. When he looked right, I sprinted left.
Ooh.
That's the only way I was able to beat him.
Oh, that is so cool. Because that's the hard part is as you do make a move, the crowd's going crazy for him.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it really tough. So you and Tim DeBoom.
Yeah.
Become buddies and start training together for this race, right?
Yeah.
And it's fine when you're training together to push yourselves to another level. But in 98, you win the race. Tim finishes 10th.
Yeah.
And in his mind, he's going, I feel great for Peter, but I know every time we train, there were times where I was hurting that guy.
Oh, I would say more often than not.
That's what he said.
I'm a slow trainer, but I'm a fast racer.
Yeah.
So, but Tim knows all my weaknesses, and he knows even when we battled a few years later, we were neck and neck down a Lee Drive, he knows I like to run on his left shoulder, so he always put me on his right shoulder, knowing that drives me nuts.
So, but Tim goes home after getting 10th going, that guy with somebody who I hurt in training, and he wins, and I'm 10th. Why?
Yeah.
Right? So that drove him, right? And so you win in 98, and you come back, and you win again in
2000. Because 99, I was second.
Right, but you won in 98.
That's right.
Yeah. In 99, second to Luke.
Yeah.
That's we did our fun photo shoot
with
the two of you guys. Yeah. And then when you win in 2000, you beat Tim by 2 minutes and 4 seconds, something like that.
Something like that. I dug so deep on that race.
And the 98 race was magical, right? You're coming down Elite Drive. This is beautiful. This is awesome. It's perfect.
It was my perfect day.
Perfect day.
It was perfect. The feelings, everything. Magical. Yeah. Magical day. Yeah.
2000, you win by 2 minutes. And I love how both of you guys came away from that race. At 2 minutes, Tim was like, 2 minutes? You got to be kidding me. I lost by 2 minutes. I'm going to spend this whole year with 204. That's what I got to make up. That's going to the bathroom. How did I do that? And you came away going, I can't believe I only won by 2 minutes. Yeah, that was way too close.
Yeah.
So you started training. The race is October. You're full bore in November.
Yeah, full. 30-hour weeks in November.
Burying yourself.
Yeah. Blocking rock out.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. I know, I've got to dominate.
Yeah.
Oh, you weren't telling him the truth.
No, he didn't know. He had no idea.
Because you were going to show everybody you could just dominate this race. And how'd that work out?
No, not very good. DNF. DNF in Kona, 2001.
While Tim wins.
Yeah.
Okay. And at that point, you pretty much were done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I was done with the sport.
I was definitely broken. There was a lot of issues that I locked a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
And it was 2001 after I really, really struggled that winter.
Yeah.
And ended up being, my body was run down, and I actually took a bit of a break.
Yes.
From training, and you know.
Did you think you were done?
I thought I was done. Yeah. But I went through the motions. Yeah. I had sponsors, and I felt like I needed to do it for them, and you know, show up at these races. I managed to win Ironman Canada, but it wasn't a pretty victory.
Hey, a victory is a victory. Yeah.
But Mark Allen opened up his world to me, and I could call any time, and he basically chaperoned me.
Yeah.
He got me back.
What was interesting is I remember you telling me you'd be out on your motorcycle, and you'd be driving the routes of your bike routes, right? And then you'd be at Starbucks and in your leathers, and you'd have little crumbs hanging here and there. You're 25 pounds heavy.
Yeah.
And was it Tim Hasegawa?
Rob Hasegawa.
Rob Hasegawa.
Yeah.
Rob Hasegawa, your buddy, takes an article out of Inside Triathlon. It's Mark Allen, 15 weeks to your first Ironman. Basically puts it in front of you and says, Peter, go finish that thing and be done, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the moment, right? That was sort of the, okay, you know what? I'll go do this with no expectations.
Yeah, and it was also, I needed to be back on the island. This is where I rented a little cabin up at 6,000 feet on Saddle Road. And I would live up there and drive down every day and do my training down here. And I spent 3.5 weeks living in solitary, just being comfortable on the island again, swimming in the ocean, and just getting my confidence back and being out there dealing with the winds. And actually from the Big Island, went back and met with Mark Shaman.
Yes.
And
with
Brent Secunda. Yeah, we did a little bit of Shaman. I spent some time in Santa Cruz with Mark, and we chatted. And by the time I left Santa Cruz, I was ready to race. And
you dropped 25 pounds. Yeah, and what I love is that time when you were up there, like you didn't have any, you were totally
no cell
isolation,
phone, no
nothing,
internet,
right?
Nothing.
And so there was some, it's a military area up there.
Oh, yeah.
There was some bombings going on, and you didn't know. You thought maybe
I thought it was in World War III.
Yeah. There's all bombs are going on.
Yeah, and I remember being down here, and I was swimming with the Masters Club, and I was like, I thought it was a world war out there. What's all the bomb? And they're like, oh, it's Tuesday night. It's bomb night. They do their shell practices up at night. And I was like,
bomb night. I love that. Yeah. We have bomb night.
Yeah.
So, but then when you came back in 2002, it wasn't about winning.
No.
It was about you loving this island. And I still remember you saying, I'm coming into the energy lab. Tim's leading the race. And he sees Peter Reed with a big smile on his face. Not because I'm going to run you down, but he's like, hey, Tim, I'm just so excited to be out here again. And you're thinking, he's got to be really confused by this.
Oh, yeah. He actually told me afterwards. He's, you know, we crossed paths, and he's like, He thinks he's going to run me down. He's smiling. He knows he's catching me. And meanwhile, I'm like, hey, man, we're racing.
We're having fun. Yeah. You can have the race. Yeah. I'm just excited to be second.
Yeah, exactly. I was excited to be second.
Wins are great, but that was probably a win in your book.
That was a win in my book. Yeah, for sure.
How fun was that? And then you come back next year and win.
Yeah.
Win your third title. And it's one thing to win once, twice. Once you start winning three times, that puts you in very select company. And what did it mean to you to come back and win it? Did it mean more the 2002 race just to be back enjoying? Or did it mean more to win in 2003?
I think 2002 was,
more
was
important.
A special race for me. It was I overcame a lot to just to show up on the start line again with the headspace to be racing again. 2003 was, you know,
sort of great.
I hit it. Like, you know, I was just like, I did my job.
You were back.
Yeah.
You were back working and training.
It wasn't magical. It was, you know, it was, I did my job. I was the best I could be. I tested myself against the best guys in the world. And everything was there. But 2002 was a real, like, big, big turning point for me.
So you're now a pilot.
Yeah.
You've been a pilot for a number of years. Yeah. Was it hard to walk away from the sport?
No, I never did well in the public eye. I struggled with that.
See, I never saw that.
Yeah, I put on a good act.
You did put on a good act. Yeah. I've always found you to be...
No, I struggle. It takes a lot out of me.
Yeah.
And luckily, you know, my manager, Murphy, Ryan Schreiber, knew that right from the get-go. And he would be like, okay, we got to do a couple. You got to do a couple of those things. And I would put out all this energy, but I always come out drained.
So it was a lot of energy.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of energy. And after I stopped racing, I worked for Specialized for a number of years.
Yep.
They offered me a dream position. They're a great company, really, really supportive. But I would just be like, I'm just not comfortable with this. And luckily, where I was living, there was a flight school. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to do a familiarization fight, see what it is. And I was hooked.
You loved it.
Yeah. And, you know, I still remember the look on my face on my wife's face when I came home and I said, I want to be a pilot. What? And she's like, okay, if this is what you want to do. And I was traveling the world with Specialized. I had a coaching gig in Monaco. I was flown over first class.
Right.
To back in school with all these kids. I'm the old guy in the class. Everybody's pointing to the old guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, struggling to try and memorize stuff, to get my brain working again.
God.
To getting my first job where I'm washing planes, washing the bathroom. You know, I was world champion, traveling
three
first
times.
Class around the world to try and earn a flying position.
Yeah.
You know, and I was in the bush for 2.5 years, a small little community flying loggers in and out of camps, fish camps. And
so you're basically, people are going fishing, you're flying them and landing in the water, the pontoon landing.
Yeah, I fly float planes. Yeah.
Float planes.
Yeah.
And how
so you know all those pictures you see in Alaska, float planes.
That's
flying.
You.
Yeah, I'm flying on the west coast of Canada doing that.
I mean, the weather sometimes could be a little challenging.
Oh, it's I've scared myself. I've almost died about twice.
Have you
really? Really close, yeah.
And have there been times where people go, "You look a lot like Peter Reed."
Oh yeah.
What do you tell
I
them?
I still get that.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
Do you say no? I have no idea who you mean.
Well. There's always this, it's a double. Like, people are looking at me and I can feel them kind of looking at me, and then they'll come up after a flight and they'll be, "You look just like this Ironman guy, you know, used to do triathlons." Or they'll be like, are you Peter Reed? And like, yeah, that's me. And then all of a sudden there's the second look, "You know how to fly? Like, what?
No, this is my first flight." Yours? Yeah. Is it your flight too? Yeah.
Yeah.
That is amazing. So this is a little bit of old home week.
Mm-hmm.
We get back here. Yesterday it's Dave Scott and Mark Allen and Heather and Paula. Is it good to be back?
It feels amazing. Yeah. Last time I was here about 5 years ago, it felt a bit awkward. It felt like I hadn't raced in a decade.
Yeah.
It was a bit confusing.
You felt a little disconnected.
That's exactly it. I felt disconnected. This trip feels like I raced yesterday. And the warmth and the feeling that you guys from the Hall of Fame have been giving me, you know, just hanging around with this awesome club, just feeling all these memories and awesome relationships with all these people around here on the island. I ran into the swim coach of the Kona Masters Aquatic Club this morning, Steve, and just like the embraces, and it feels amazing. So happy to be back.
Well, it's great. Great, great, great to have you back.
Thanks, Paul.
And it's I remember our trip to Lanzarote. And my favorite Peter wins Ironman Lanzarote, probably the most brutal race on the face of the earth. And of course, the local announcer comes up, and what's he going to say? So, Peter, you just won. You'll be back next year. And Peter's like, of course I'll be back next year to defend my title. I was walking away. It's like, no way. I'm coming back to this place. This is a brutal race.
Well, I actually got a note from Paula last week. I was like, hey, I've got 10 spots at my VIP table. I'd love to have you on my table. You helped me so much with my career. And she's like, yeah, remember that race I told you to come do with me, Ironman Lanzarote? You're like, it's going to be an easy race. We'll have so much fun. I was like, yeah, I remember that race. Yeah,
that was brutal. And we both, I think we exchanged a phone call when Luke Van Leerde decided he was going to become part of Club La Santa
and was going to train
and do Ironman Lanzarote in May. Yeah. And I think both of us were like, I don't know if that's
the
his best.
I think that was pretty much
the end of his career. Yeah, because he was too fragile to be doing multiple Ironman, especially something as brutal as that.
Oh, yeah, just the train there. I think that is the ultimate place to go for 3 weeks, and you get out, recover, you go back for 3 weeks. But to live there for a few months.
One road. You're going to go in the hole.
Yeah.
Peter, always a pleasure to catch up. So enjoy chatting with you. It's great to have you back on the island.
Thanks, Bob.
Don't be a stranger. Come back over. Poncho Man, take us out. Three-time Ironman World Champion, Ironman Hall of Famer, Mr. Peter Reed. How about a round of applause from out here? There, yeah.
This morning, smiled at the rising sun. Three little birds, it's on my doorstep. Watching Breakfast with Bob, oh yeah. Thank you.